platoon and hated it, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think, you know, you couldn't fault the system. We had great teams, you know, and you weren't competing against some guy who couldn't play.
Right.
Could really play.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Billy Johnson was older than you?
Yes.
When did he start?
Terrific player.
Was he?
Oh, yeah, true. The only thing that, you know, he was a good fielder, and he could hit with some power. And he would hit, you know, anywhere from 270, 290, somewhere in there. The only problem, he was very average running, and he hit into a lot of double plays. That was the only thing that his only drawback was, he hit a certain number of double plays. But he was an excellent player and a good money player. Tough guy. Tough guy meaning tough competitor, nice guy.
Yeah. He quit in the early 50s?
I don't know. He was traded to the Cardinals.
Oh, that's right.
And finished up over there.
That's when McDougal, I guess, came along about the same time.
Yeah, I can't remember what year he got traded.
I think that was 51, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, tell me the circumstances of the trip to Japan with Joe and Marilyn.
It wasn't a trip. I was stationed at the Tokyo Army Hospital.
Okay.
And I'd come back from Korea. So Sarah and our son Pete were in Tokyo, and that was in the spring of 54.
Okay.
And Joe and Marilyn Monroe had just gotten married, and Lefty O'Doul, who was the manager of the San Francisco Seals, had done a lot for Japanese baseball and used to come over there and give clinics to the Japanese professional teams. And he suggested to Joe that Marilyn at that time had been suspended by her studio. She was making a movie called Pink Tights and didn't like the script and rebelled, and they suspended her. And then she and Joe decided to get married, and Lefty convinced Joe that he ought to have a honeymoon in Japan. He said, it's a foreign country, they'll leave you alone. And so that appealed to Joe, that he could walk around and do anything he wanted to do, and nobody would bother him. So he and Marilyn got married, and little did he know that at that time the two biggest items in the Japanese life were ball players and movie stars, and now they got the two biggest coming to Japan. And so they landed at Haneda Airport, and it took them almost 7 hours to get from Haneda Airport to the Imperial Hotel. They had something like 4 or 5 million Japanese lining the streets all the way from the airport to the hotel just to get a glimpse of them. So we were in Japan at the time. And then when Lefty had arranged for their tour of the camps, then I was able to get the Army to give me some temporary duty, and I went with them and help with the clinics.
Okay.
Could instruct the infielders, give them some hitting and bunting instruction, and along with Joe. And Marilyn was there for part of that time, and then she went to Korea for part of the time to entertain the troops.
Okay. So you actually gave clinics for a few days with DiMaggio.
We went to about 4 or 5 different teams. We went to first in Tokyo, then Osaka.
Yeah.
And then down to Fukuoka.
Yeah.
So we went to those three places and were there several days in each place.
And then Marilyn went up to entertain the troops
in Korea.
And Joe went.
The truce had been signed. The armistice had been signed. You know, they still don't have a peace treaty.
Right. Right. Yeah. And Joe wasn't very happy about that.
Well, he didn't think, you know, Joe was anti-Army, having been in the Army in World War II, and he just said, you know, you're not obligated, you don't have to go over there. But she felt that she was that close, that really was something she should do.
Yeah.
And of course, she was really widely acclaimed, as you can imagine.
Yeah. So did Mrs. Brown meet them as well?
Oh, yeah.
Meet Marilyn as well?
Yeah, we were on their honeymoon with them. See, and then Lefty O'Doul's wife came over too.
Okay.
When she found out that Marilyn was there and Sarah was there, Lefty brought her over. So the three gals were together all the time, and all three, you know, great looking gals.
Yes,
and
yes.
Because Lefty O'Doul's wife was a beautiful gal.
Yeah.
And Marilyn, of course, it just was gorgeous.
Well, did they go shopping and stuff? Or
Yeah, sure.
Did they have people protecting them? Or
well, you know, people would stare at them and whatnot.
But they would just went off by
themselves? They would go off and do some things. Now, you know, Marilyn in those days, she had to have a lot of preparation to do things and whatnot, but they got along fine.
And you had dinner together and stuff like that?
Yes, sure.
Did you know Lefty O'Doul from your San Francisco days?
Yes, I knew because the high schools used to play at Seal Stadium. Now, I had never met him a lot, but he knew who I was, having been a high school player there.
Okay.
And, of course, he managed the Seals and was a San Francisco hero.
Yeah.
He was he grew up there and managed there for years and wouldn't ever manage to go east. He wanted to stay right in San Francisco. Yeah.
So, but you didn't actually meet him till later in life.
Well, I met him later when I got into professional ball, and I may have met him too as a high school player,
okay,
because they had different baseball functions around the town that we would go to.
Yeah. Who did you have a baseball hero growing up?
Not really. I followed Archie Vaughn a lot,
okay,
because he played for Pittsburgh and he was a shortstop and he was a left-hand hitter that could hit.
Okay.
And I just kind of followed him and it sort of identified with him. But other than that, I didn't have any real heroes.
But Pittsburgh, was Pittsburgh your team?
No. I just followed Archie Vaughn.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite team that you followed?
No.
Growing up?
Not really. Not really.
Not the Yankees from when you lived in New Jersey?
Not really.
You mostly played baseball, didn't you?
I
mean, but did your dad get to see you play much? Did he?
Yeah. I got to the major leagues, he essentially kind of retired and came back and watched ball games.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. So he spent the summers
all the games,
in
all
New York.
The World Series. And
did he see you play in college when you were?
Yeah, some. He couldn't see a lot. He could see me play at Stanford. He couldn't see me play much at UCLA or Tulane.
Right. Yeah, that's a long way in those days.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. This interview was May 26, 1998. Dr. Bobby Brown by Paul Rogers in Dallas, Texas.
And they wanted me to ask you about Jackie Robinson, about when you played with Jackie Robinson when you were with Newark and he was with Montreal.
Right.
Do you have any particular memories of that?
Well, it was a tremendous amount of publicity surrounding it, and he was the first black player in professional baseball, and of course he was with a very good team. Montreal had an excellent team, and they won the pennant that year in the International League, and he was... he led the league in hitting, and he was very dangerous on the base path. He ran wild, and he was just a very effective and a very good player. And he took a lot of abuse, obviously. It was an unusual event for the people in professional baseball. And of course, his entry into the league caused a lot of commotion, and there was a lot of unrest, and he put up with a lot.
And but you played against him in '46 when you were with Newark.
That's right.
And he was with Montreal.
That's right.
And you guys had a good team, didn't you?
Yes, we ended up with Baltimore and Newark ended up in a tie for third. We ended up playing Montreal in the Shaughnessy playoffs. And I think we beat Baltimore, which made us the third place team. And I think the first and third place teams played, and the second and fourth place teams played. And we lost to Montreal on a questionable umpire's call at home plate in the sixth game.
Oh, really? What happened?
Well, it was a close play, and we thought that we had the Montreal runner out, and the umpire called him safe. And Yogi to this day said that he was robbed. But Yogi was our catcher, and it was a very closely fought six-game series, and it should have gone to the seventh game, really.
Did Robinson run wild against you all, or?
Well, he ran wild against everybody. He was, and the whole Montreal team. They had a team that had terrific speed. They had at least three or four guys that could really steal bases. So they they did a lot of running, and of course he was one of those four, and it was, they were a very difficult team to defend against.
Let me jump now to when you got out of baseball. And you you did your residency in, at Stanford, right?
I did it at the San Francisco County Hospital on the Stanford service.
Okay.
The county hospital was divided in half. The University of California took care of half of it, and Stanford took care of half of it at that time.
Okay. And then that was 4 years?
I took 3 years of internal medicine, and then I went to New Orleans for my fourth year in a, with a cardiology fellowship.
Okay. And then how did you end up in Fort Worth from there?
Well, I joined Albert Goggins, my partner. He and I were very close friends when I was a medical student at Tulane. He was older than I and was a resident on the internal medicine staff at Charity Hospital. And we became very fast friends, and he went into practice in the early 50s and came to Fort Worth to practice because he had an offer to join a clinic here. Then he ultimately went into his own practice, established his own private practice. And so he'd been in practice about 5 years when I finished all my training, and it just so happened that he was doing cardiology, and that was my main interest, so I joined him at that time.
Okay. Did you didn't have any connection with Fort Worth before?
No, none. We played an exhibition game with the Yankees and the Fort Worth Cats, I guess, back in the late 40s, but that was the only time I'd ever been to Fort Worth.
Okay. But you, I guess you liked it right away?
It was a wonderful place to practice, and it was a wonderful place to live and to raise a family. It couldn't have been better.
And Sarah was from Dallas, so...
Sarah grew up in Dallas.
So that she was close to home.
Right.
Now, did you have any connection with baseball in those, what 20 years between, or before you became involved with the Rangers?
The only involvement I had was when Brad Corbett bought the Rangers, and I helped him run the team from I guess it was May 1st to October the 1st in 1974.
How did that come about?
Well, he bought the team. He was a big fan. He didn't know much about baseball as far as how it worked or anything, and then he asked me if I would go out and just kind of oversee things for a while, just to kind of keep him informed what was going on so that he could be apprised of what was taking place and so forth, and just until he got his feet on the ground as far as his ownership responsibilities were concerned. And so that's what happened. I took a leave of absence, went out there, was in baseball for 6 months, and then came back to practice.
Okay. And then how did tell me how the your involvement in the American League presidency came about?
Well, in 1983, they were looking to replace Bowie Kuhn as a commissioner. I think Bowie was had agreed to serve out his remaining months until they found a commissioner. And so they had a search committee that was interviewing candidates, and Eddie Childs of Fort Worth, who then owned the Rangers and was a friend of mine, asked me if I would go up and interview for the job. And I thought about it for a while, and I was then close to 60, and I knew I could practice probably another 3 to 5 years before I thought I'd probably wear out and have to retire. So I thought this might be a good change for me, and I'd practiced 25 and a half years, and it was getting pretty tough.
Yeah.
So I went up and interviewed, and I had a couple of interviews, and then they told me that they really were looking for a businessman, and actually, I think they had already selected Peter Ueberroth, which was an excellent choice. But Lee McPhail was retiring from the presidency of the American League, and they asked me if I would be interested in doing that. And I talked with Lee about it. He said, really, it would be better suited for you than the commissioner's job, only because it's a baseball job, and you know baseball. And so I agreed, and that's when I went on up to become the president.
So did you interview for that a separate time? Or?
No.
Okay.
No.
So that just sort of happened. Then.
Right.
Okay. And so you became president in 1980? 84?
It was February 1st of 1984.
Okay. And you served until?
August the 1st of 1994.
Okay.
Then I stayed, I think it was about 10 days or 12 days to try to help Gene Beauty when he first came in.
Right.
So I left the office about the 11th or 12th of August of 1994.
Was moving to New York an obstacle to take the job?
Not really. We had a tough time finding an apartment because the real estate crunch was on in New York at that particular time. Things were booming, and we did have a somewhat of a difficult time to find an apartment. But once we found an apartment and bought it, it was a relatively simple move. All of our kids had married and were out on their own, so we didn't have too much in the way of family responsibilities in Fort Worth, and so the move was relatively easy.
What did you like best about the job, and what did you like the least?
Well, of course, it was a baseball job, and I enjoyed baseball. I enjoyed the games. I enjoyed the meetings about the different aspects of baseball. That all was very good for me. I think by far the most difficult thing and the most unpleasant was having to with both the players and the umpire unions, that got very contentious at times and was not an awful lot of fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. That made the job much more difficult than it used to be, I suspect. What about the suspensions and that sort of thing? Were you always sort of worried that something was going to erupt and you'd have to suspend somebody, or was that just part of the job?
Well, that's just part of the job. You know that's going to happen, and you know what happens on the field, and that your only concern is trying to get the people that are really involved and to do what's fair. And I think that in most instances, fair solutions were devised.
Did they have the appeal system that they have now when you were in office?
Yeah, they appealed. The union appeals everything.
Right.
Rare when they don't appeal something, but perhaps a fine of $100 is too minimal for them to pool with. But anytime you suspend a player for any length of time, it's usually automatically appealed and you have to have a hearing.
Right. And sometimes they it seems like they give up their appeal just so if they're to play a certain series, and then they'll give it up and play and serve their appeal against a weaker team or something.
Well, they try to do that, but you really have the latitude of starting the suspension when you want to. So while it may appear that they can decide to appeal at a certain time that would be advantageous to them, at the same time, there is some flexibility in the league office to set the time elements of the suspension to suit the league and not just the player. Now, obviously, if there's a big series coming up and the player has been suspended and he wants to appeal to stay to play in that series and until they get to New York, he can do it. But eventually, he has to pay the piper.
Okay. What were your other responsibilities as president? Could you just sort of describe them generally?
Well, of course, the league office, what the league office is designed to do is to put on the game. You have to hire the umpires, you have to pay them, you have to get an umpire schedule so that you've got the crews going in different to the different cities at different times, and you have to make out the schedule, the playing schedule for the teams, which is a very laborious process and deals with a lot of controversy always. You have to collect receipts and dispense the monies to the different teams and to take care of all the on-field discipline mm-hmm. and to take care of any league matters that affect your 14 teams.
So it's a pretty demanding job, I guess.
Well, it keeps you busy. People don't think that you do much, but when you get right down to it, there's always stuff going on that keeps you pretty active.
And there's a lot of stuff, it sounds like, that's not particularly public that just has to be done. Yeah. Well, Dr. Brown, I think that's about all I wanted to ask you. That's great. That sort of wraps up the what the editors wanted me to cover that wasn't an original interview. So let's go to a ball game this summer.
All right, Paul. We'll do it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
See you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.